Today is about adjectives. We've been talking about adjectives pretty much all along because we've already had adjectives going. So this is a slight tip overview of what adjectives is all about. It says here that the adjectives are inflected in accordance with the nouns that they qualify. And we know that. Whenever you have an adjective, you know, like the brown, the green grass. Green is an adjective, and it has the same inflection as grass. So grass is masculine plural genitive, and green is also masculine plural genitive, because it refers to the same thing. The green grass is one thing. The steel cup is one thing. Yeah. So because it's like one thing, all the words refer to this one thing. They all inflect in the same way. This green cup must all be inflected in the same way. That's what adjectives and pronouns are all about. If you have a feminine noun, then the adjective takes on the similar kind of ending as a feminine noun usually. So there are some exceptions to these rules, but that's a kind of general idea. So it's quite easy. It looks exactly the same as the noun you qualify. Then it goes on about something about if there are two or more adjectives in common to nouns, so that this is really very kind of unusual for these things to happen. I wouldn't worry too much about that. And he talks about when there is gender conflict. Again, I can't remember ever seeing that actually in the sutta. It must be very rare. I'm not sure why he brings it up, but it's just to be comprehensive, I think. And then he says that an adjective usually precedes the noun that qualifies them. But when there are several adjectives with one noun, very often only one adjective precedes and the rest follow the noun. So you can have this long list of words, and usually the second word will be like the main noun, the main word, which is being qualified by all these adjectives around it. And then the demonstrative pronoun, the tongue, the soul, etc., that will be in front of the whole group. And then it talks about an alternative construction. We talked about this before as well. When an adjective or all the adjectives follow its noun, this usually indicates that it is being predicated of the noun. And this predicated basically means that you translate using the word which is. So instead of saying green grass, you say the grass which is green, right? That is predication. In other words, you're using a verb to make the attribute. So these are just two different ways of saying it, basically. These are two different ways of translating adjective. It's either you translate it as the green grass or the grass which is green. And it's important to keep that in mind, that these are two valid ways of translating adjectives, because sometimes one way will work nicely, the other one won't. So that's a very good one to keep in mind. And of course, the same thing with people. You can say that the tall man or the man who is tall, right? It's the same kind of idea. Thinking they have. So this is good to keep that in mind, that this is these are two ways of translating adjectives. And then it goes on about nexus and junction. These are just technical terms to talk about these two different ways of translating adjectives. Okay, so then we have a bunch of adjectives down here. So this gets some idea what these are about. So if you have akusala. Now he has bad, but the usual translation which Bhikkhubodhi uses, unwholesome, is a very common translation. In other words, bad might be a little bit too strong, but unwholesome is
probably
papa. Papa is more like bad, yeah. Papa is a translation that Bhikkhubodhi uses for bad. Uses for papa now. He used to use evil, but we're going away from evil.
What about unskillful?
Skillful is not a possibility. I would say the meaning of kusala varies between skillful and wholesome, depending on the context. Hmm. So you have kusala and akusala. One is a negation of the other one, obviously.
Because unwholesome has this moral overtone to it again that can be a bit laborious for a lot of Westerners, I seem to.
But sometimes that's what it means sometimes, basically.
Yeah, fair enough.
Atita. Past, simple as that. I think that's really a past participle, I think, but past. We have ananta. He has infinite here. I don't like the idea of infinite, because ananta literally means non-ending, without an end. So I think it's better to call it something like borderless or boundless or something like that is a better translation in my opinion. Because infinite in modern kind of the way we usually talk about the word infinite means something which goes on forever. That's the kind of standard idea. I think in a dictionary it actually is defined in a way which is acceptable, but in kind of, you know, the common parlance you say infinite means something which goes on forever. I don't think that's the meaning here. The meaning is simply something which is boundless, something which doesn't have an end. That's the idea of this word. Idda, powerful or prosperous, is not all that common. Kanta, this is a very common one, agreeable, lovely. For example, you talk about the five senses, the pleasures of the five senses, they're kanta, agreeable, lovely.
Can you say what this is, PP, kama?
Past participle of the word kameti, which is to love and to think. Kanta is actually a past participle, but it's used as an adjective very often in the suttas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So okay, it actually means loved, something that's loved. The seven, that's a type of, that's a reference to the type of a verb it is. It's a seventh conjugation verb. But I haven't really talked about the type of conjugation because it just complicates matters unnecessarily. Yeah? So I just left that out completely. Yeah. Kameti is the actual verb here. Yeah, yeah. Then you have Kalyana, good, beautiful. So that's like a Kalyana Mitta, a good friend, Mitta as a friend. It's a classical example. Then you have Kusala, which is the opposite of Akusala, so that's wholesome or skillful or maybe good. Dakina, right or southern. So it either means to the right or it means to the southern. Duva is fixed, and this word is very often used together with the next one, which is Nitya, which is permanent. This Nitya is the antonym of Anicca. You know, Anicca is impermanent, right? So Nitya is permanent. And Duva is like basically is an adjective that's often very used together with Nitya. So something is said to be permanent, fixed, and then eternal, you know, sansata, and not subject to change, abhiparinama dhamma. Kind of standard phrase that you have in the suttas.
I thought Nitya as well. I don't translate it as regular.
He does, yeah.
Nitya donors and stuff.
Yeah, Nitya butter, a regular meal. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a very interesting point that something is regular rather than actually permanent. Yeah.
Oh, regular.
Yeah. Regular. Yeah, it's an interesting idea he has there. I must admit, in a certain context, that can make good sense to have Nitya meaning regular rather than permanent. Yeah. Pachima, last or western. It's last in the sense, and western. You can see here how they have this kind of natural idiom, last, because the sun goes down in the west, right? So it becomes last and western. That's how it works. Pahuta means much or many. Piya is dear. It's a very common word for monks to be called Piya something. Yeah. Piya, dear. Prosperous, Pita. You have Vama on the next page, left, and then you have Sasaka, eternal, we were talking about this before. Yeah. Sukara, easy, and this is interesting just to know what's going on here, because Kara is from the verb.
Make, Kara.
It's from the verb Karoti, to make, exactly. Yeah. So Sukara, easy making.
Okay.
Because Su is, interesting about Su is that it's a very general prefix which means anything which is positive in a sense. It can be easy, it can mean good, it can mean any kind of positive thing. Yeah. And Sukha is a similar kind of thing. Sukha and Dukkha are also based around that same idea in the sense that it's the car ending, just like the general ending, which is added to Su. And Do, you have a general car ending added to Do. So one is good and one is bad, basically. So happy and miserable, or suffering and happiness. Yeah.
And then ka, sukha, again, the next one is ka, is again referring to making, right?
Sukha. No, not in this case, because it's an H in there. Yeah.
Okay.
In this case, it seems to be just some kind of ending that is added to the ka, to the su, to make it into a word, basically. Sukha.
Oh.
Sukha. It's a different kind of thing here. Sometimes you get H's.
Has something to do with hard to bear?
I don't think that. No, to bear is dareti, the word dareti, yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't fit. Yeah. I think people are just making things up.
Okay. But sukha is easy to bear.
Easy to bear,
yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah. Okay, past participles may acquire special meanings when used as adjectives. So ditta literally means seen. past participle, but it also comes to mean visible in that sense. It's a good one to remember. The distinction between substantives are basically nouns, right? Or actually, nouns is a class of words which includes both substantives and adjectives. But a substantive is a kind of an ordinary noun that we talk about as a substantive. An adjective is a qualifying noun. The distinction between these is not absolute, and many words can be used in both functions. That is quite good to know about. For example, you have kusalang, which can mean the good or the wholesome, whereas kusala in itself just means good. And sukkam is happiness, whereas sukha, when it qualifies something, is happy. So this is how they usually what they usually look like. And if they are used as nouns, then it usually would be in the neuter gender, abstract nouns. Okay, now, so we come to some more verbs, and this is called the third conjugation. And again, I would just advise you to forget about this conjugation business, because that has only to do with how the words actually form, and it's really irrelevant how they form. You will see that in the table there, you see that how they have exactly the same endings as all the other verbs. The verbs there, verb endings, the T, he, thinks, manyati to think, he thinks, they think, the A-N-T, I ending, manyasi, you think, manyata, you plural think, manyami, manyama. So this is it's all very regular, very easy, particularly with the present tense, it's very straight to the point. And then you have a number of verbs here, which are also the third conjugation. Let's go through them quickly. None of them are all that, some of them might be important, I'm not sure yet. You have chijati, to cut, if you cut a tree, for example. Jayati, to be born. You have adiyati, to take. So this is similarly as adinna, adinna dana, taking. Adinna, that's different actually. That's where it is. Adinna is not given. Yeah, forget about that.
But it looks like one of those ER forms.
It is, because it has the. It's very similar to the. This is one of the problems with this particular root. These verbs is that they look very much like a passive.
Right.
That is one of the problems. So you actually have to be very careful in distinction between some verbs look like passive and not actually passives. And these are the ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is what makes it difficult. Yeah.
Are there many of these third conjugation nouns?
Verbs. There are some, but not the most common ones. Yeah. So basically, you have to just be on the lookout. Yeah. Look it up. So if the sentence looks a bit funny and doesn't work out properly, then maybe it's the passive rather than the third conjugation. Apajati, to acquire, to produce, to get, has, is a kind of very general verb which is used in many different for many different constructions. You can see it's very general there, to have and to get, to produce, very general stuff. Upajati, to arise, to happen, to become. Quite a common verb, but an important one. Things arise in your mind, things come about, is the verb you would use. And it's very similar to upapajati, which means a transmigrator, to be reborn. And you find that, unfortunately, in the sutta, sometimes these two verbs are actually mixed up, particularly in the English, kind of the PTS versions of the sutta. Sometimes these things are actually mixed up. Whereas one actually very clearly just means to be means rebirth, but the other one actually means anything arising. But there's an important difference there in Pali. Upasampajati, to enter into. And you can see this is very similar to. Is it? No. No, it's not. No, it isn't. So that's wrong.
Well, upasampajati.
Pavisati, yeah, but it's different because upasampajati is used like for meditation attainments and things like that. Yeah. So, yeah. Nipajati, to lie down. Patipajati, to engage in, to follow, to practice. If, for example, you practice the Noble Eightfold Path, you patipajati the Noble Eightfold Path. That's how you practice it. To engage, to behave.
It's from patipada.
It's related to patipada, exactly. It's the same root as patipada, yeah. And patipanna. How does it go again? Ujjupatipanno, the Sangha, the colors of the Sangha. Ujjupatipanno, Nyayapatipanno, etc. Yeah.
Well,
practice, yeah. Vimuchati, to be freed. Nirujati, one of Ajahn Brahm's favorite ones. To stop, to cease. So this is like, this is a good one, an important one. This is related to the word nirodha. Nirodha is a noun form of nirujati. And vijati is important, that means to be found or to occur, to exist, etc. That's quite an important one as well. And an important idiom with vijati, he comes brings it up straight away here, is the idiom tanang etang vijati, which you have down there. Now, tanang is like a case or a ground, and etang is this. So literally, and vijati is to exist, right? So tanang etang literally means something like this case exists. It has this place is found here, but usually it doesn't actually mean a place. It means an attainment or this particular construction or this, you know, it's usually not it's usually abstract. So this case is found. This sort of thing is found. It's not actually doesn't refer to a concrete place. This is possible, in other words, is what it means. Then you have the negative, which is a very important one, is netang tanang vijati. This case does not exist. In other words, this is impossible, this cannot be. And I said that this is a very kind of categorical statement. When the Buddha says netang tanang vijati, it really means this doesn't exist. It's one of those things which is important to realize because it has very important consequences for how you understand the suttas, these kind of things. So the positive doesn't mean this must exist, but the negative means this cannot exist. This is actually quite an important phrase. You can come across it again and again in the suttas. And then he has down the bottom, which is interesting here, that passive forms occasionally coincide with active, and the meaning in each case must be inferred from context. So you have rukka chijanti must mean this must be a passive because if it's active, then the trees become the agent, so the trees are cutting, which doesn't make any sense. But if it's passive, it means the trees are cut, right? So by somebody. So it must be passive because of, otherwise it doesn't make any sense, basically. So sometimes you have to do that. That's just common sense to figure out what's going on. Okay, so... I think that's enough on that page. Probably need to go into great detail about those things, I think. And then you have some more past participles on the next page. And these are participles in na. So far, the participles that we have seen are in ta or ita. That's how we recognize participles so far. And they are the most common types of past participles. It's good to know that. But there are also other types of past participles. And one of those types are these which have the na ending. So this is another type you have to keep in mind as well, just to make life more difficult. And of these na endings, you have the following one. Some of these are actually quite important. As you will see, you have chinna, which is not so important, but that means to cut off.
Also the defilements or something? Or?
Yeah, tripramana as well, cut off anything basically, including abstract stuff. Dinna is given, but that's like an adinna dana, non-given. Adinna dana, taking the non-given. Apanna, possessing and having. Upanna, happened or arisen. This is important, you see, it's quite a lot, both of these. Upapanna, reborn, come into existence. Again, there is a distinction here between these two past participles. Upapanna always refers to rebirth, whereas upanna just means general arising of anything, any kind of, any sort of thing, not specifically rebirth. Patipanna means engaged in, following, practicing. Now the interesting thing here, and this is, I think you should look at this while you see this right here, patipanna is a past participle, and you would expect it to be translated as a past participle in English. Engaged in is one good translation. But actually, often what you find that some of these participles, past participles, are better translated as present participles in English. And that is just because of the idiom of the language is different. The idiom is actually, and that's what it actually, what it comes from here. So for example, in English you could say practicing the path, or engaged in the path maybe, and the meaning is exactly the same, but whereas one idiom uses the past participle, one uses the present participle. And the same problem arises with Pali. The different idiom means you use different participles to say the same thing here. So but keep that in mind, because sometimes you actually do have to translate a past participle with the present participle in English. It's important to remember that, but the idiom is not always the same. Sampanna, endowed with, or to have, having, you can again see the same dichotomy here, you can translate either as endowed with or having. Two different idioms in English, and one using the past participle and one using the present participle. Binna, split and divided, this is related to things like Sangha Beda, division of the Sangha, Sangha Binna, the Sangha has been divided. Nisinna, seated. Hina, diminished or eliminated from Hayati. This is also
Hinayana.
Hinayana. I think it must be the same thing as Hinayana. Huh? I think so. But usually in Hinayana, in the most context, Hina actually means like, it doesn't mean diminished or eliminated, it actually means inferior. Huh? Mm-hmm. Bad, that's what it usually means.
Yeah. Much more negative than this diminished.
So. You have, for example, when a monk returns to Leila, it's called Hiyana, Hinaya. Hinaya, what's the verb? Can't remember the verb. He returns to the Hinaya. He returns to the inferior. That's basically what it says.
Yeah, the Dhammacakka Sutta. Gamma Hina.
Gamma Hina, right, yeah. Gamma, yeah. Okay, so those are some past participles for you. And now we have another verb. This is the verb, two verbs, this and gone. And both of these verbs are very important verbs. One of them is to see, another one is to go. We know we have seen gone before, and we've probably seen both of these beforehand. But here you have the aorist of these verbs. So, in other words, the past tense of these things. So the root to see forms an aorist with inflections in a. Anyway, forget about that. Just have a rough idea on what it looks like. It's not that easy to see that this actually is the verb to see, but you get a rough idea. You see the dust in there. The dust is usually giveaway for seeing in Pali. Addasaha, addasansu, addasaha, addasatta, addasan, addasama. The dust is usually a kind of a giveaway. And then you have the verb gone further down. And all of these are pretty sort of irregular verbs. So you can see this is related to gacchati in the present tense, right? The verb gacchati in the present tense. This is the aorist of gacchati. And these are the forms down here. Agamasi, agamansu, agama, agamitta, agamasi, agamamha. So,
this paragraph there about double inflection, is that necessary? No, I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I would need more of an example or something. I mean, do we need to know that?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's just that it's... I think the only important thing is that you recognize it as an aorist. That's what really matters. So this is really the thing. So you can look at the inflections a little bit. I mean, some of those inflections of gam there are actually quite typical aorist. You know, you have the ing ending at the first person there, for example, and you have the plurals are pretty kind of typical aorist endings.
Look really close to anagami, is that right?
One that doesn't go anymore. Yeah, it's related to that. Agami is one who goes, and agami is one who returns. It's a noun from gam. So gam just means going, and agama means agami means to return. Anagami means not returning. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's related to this verb. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that is. I mean, just keep these ones in mind. The tables are there for you to check it out. You know, and if you see some of these strange verbs, it's much better to look it up and try to figure out exactly how they work, because this gets too complicated. So, of course, the problem often is that if you're going to look up these verbs in a dictionary, you actually need to know what the main verb is, because all verbs in the dictionary are listed under present tense, right? Third person singular present tense. So it would be under gacchati, this particular verb. So you have no under gacchati. But sometimes, because these forms are so unusual, sometimes these forms are listed separately, and then it actually refers to the gacchati in the dictionary. The key is missing there.
The key is
missing.
The key is missing. Yes.
We don't know where it is. Have you got one?
I'm
great, yeah. We don't know where it is. So. Okay, so then just a little bit of vocab. That's quite easy for that. Abu kirati, to sprinkle. It's not exactly very important now, but verb rather is pretty rare. This is like the ceremonial sprinkling that they would do in India in those days. They'd have a ceremonial vase or something, they would sprinkle water, and they would do a ceremonial purification, kind of Brahmin ritual. They used. Kings would do that very well.
Buddha didn't do it.
Sorry?
Buddha didn't do that.
No, this was just like kings would do that. Yeah. They would, particularly when they were kind of there, wanted to bestow something, give something away, and that sort of stuff, they would sprinkle some water on it to purify it, or whatever. It was just a ceremony, basically, they would do. Also, it would be anyway, whatever. Yeah.
Scattering bones or something, or that's a different word? Because it's just to scatter.
To scatter.
Well, always when it talks about the Shuva things, it's like the bones are scattering after
all. Oh, okay. I don't think.
I don't know which word.
I don't think this is it. Scatter. I don't think so. It could be. I can't remember now. Yeah. Chuta, to fall away. This is an important one. This is like what the devas do when they die in heavenly realm. They chuta, they fall away. Fallen away, passed away.
What's the Greek, the other word we learned for that?
Yeah, we just said the word. Past participle.
Sorry?
At the beginning we had an exercise that the deva passes away.
Okay.
And then was the tea language? What was it?
So it was like
chapati.
Chavati,
yeah. That's the kind of main word.
Yeah, Chavati, Chuta is fallen.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Then you have Viparinama, Viparinata, to change. This is quite an important one because you have like Viparinama, which is related to that one as the noun, which means to change. Viparinama, that must have led to change. Viparinata, changed. Then you have abada, illness. That's very important if you want to study the vinaya. No, that's actually gilano, that's right. Sorry, I'm mixing it up now, that's gilano. Abada is illness.
What's the gilano?
Gilano is also means like sickness or illness in the vinaya. So there's very often exemptions from the rules if you're on gilano. So it's kind of pay everyone there.
It's more like gilano is feeling ill.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a disease or something, isn't it?
No, it is illness. You are about a general illness. It's not a particular disease. No.
Okay.
Karako, doer. So the doer of the work. Binkaru, vase, ceremonial water vessel. Not the most important of words in the Pali language. Rukko, tree. Sambaro, restraint. That's an important one. Chakka, obviously, wheel is an important one. Yeah. Disa, direction, so you talk about the four directions and also up and down Pali, and also intermediate directions. Samanya, designation, agreed usage. Now one of the things I want to point out here, which maybe you haven't picked up yet, if you look at all the endings of these nouns here, you see that some of them end in O, some of them in Ung, some of them in long A. So the point of that is that it gives the gender of the noun straight away here. Because it gives you basically the ending, which is the gender of the noun. So you have the first one, the masculine, then you have one neuter, and then you have two feminine ones. And one, you see the little arrow on the page there? Can we put an arrow on your page at the very end of the list? Yeah? That means that a word is missing. There should have been a word in there. And that word is pamujan. Gladness, joy. Because that will come up in the exercise, so otherwise you will be here.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
because they didn't want to reprint the whole book and change the whole setup. But they could put an arrow quite easily in there.
I've seen other arrows. Yeah. The first one you've mentioned.
Have you? Okay. Should I mention it?
P A M.
P A P long A.
Yep.
M U. Double J A M with a dot under it.
Double J
A.
Yep.
M with a dot under it.
Yep. Double J A.
Yeah. Oh, that's like the wildly happenings.
Yeah.
But the happenings before, does that get the Pitisuka going?
That's right, yeah. It means something like gladness or joy, right? Yeah.
Gladness or joy.
Yep. You've seen other arrows, but gee, you should have told me about those arrows. You should have asked me a question.
Well, I thought that they were drawn in by the person, somebody who had this book. And
somebody was very
skilled.
Who was very
skilled.
Who was very trying. But sometimes in the dictionary, I
noticed them. Oh, you
mean that? Well, I call them a rapidograph, but I don't know if you call them. A little rapidograph, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Okay.
In the 10th edition, we have added 5 arrows.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so the last in the carnival, so Amuso is a kind of polite term between equals usually. Yeah. What's the difference?
Isn't Amuso that the one they use as friend sometimes?
Friend is quite a common translation. Sir is a very, very formal translation for that one.
Sir is more kind of the boss, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you can't say sir between equals as well in English, you know. You can't say service. The service is a polite word for saying mystery. You can't say that in English. I mean, it's not done these days very much, but I mean, it's not wrong, you know, it can be done. I would say, but generally speaking, I would agree. You know, friend is probably more accurate. Yeah.
So kind of just a difference between like bouncy or Arusa. Arusa is very, really kind of lower.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. We have Ida, it's very important in Dhanabod, we see it all the time, it means here, or, you know, here also in the sense of in this connection, you know, it's like two different uses of the word here. Kuttopana, much less, let alone, whence then, that's a kind of very archaic way of putting it, then. Whence then. Tato, thence, then, from there, from that. Mitsa, you all know what Mitsa means, it's wrong, bad. Samma, rightly or perfectly, or maybe properly in some context even.
Yeah, I can't find any more.
Can't find any more arrows? Neither can I. Yeah, I wonder
where.
I don't know how
you
see arrows. Yeah, you are.
Maybe
it's
the back somewhere.
Yeah, maybe
it's
the back. I don't know.
The key or something.
Master of arrows. It's better to be master of arrows than master of errors.
Actually,
there's a list in the back, isn't there?
Yeah.